we are here to talk about the kind of everyday realities of our encounters with the poor and needy in our society. And in particular, this one dynamic that happens to all of us, and no one feels like they did the right thing or a good job when we encounter someone that's begging. And so use this time, Lord, to meet us, to stir our hearts, to help us find you in the midst of the paradoxes that come when you follow Jesus. And we pray these things in his name. Amen. Okay, so I'm really glad to see y'all. This is something that, to be honest with you, came a little last minute in terms of what I was going to do. I told Darby that I wanted to do some sort of rector's forum on the third Sunday of Advent just because it was some open space, but I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to do. I was at the gym and was talking with, I don't know if Kimberly's here, Kimberly, Greg, and another parishioner who will remain nameless. But we were talking, and they were sort of asking me questions about this because I think you had been propositioned recently, right? Like someone had asked you for money. Yeah, or Elliot had, yeah. So they were just kind of like, what do you do about that? And I was like, that's a really good question. And it's a question that I do some teaching on sometimes when I'm going to go into a context with people and that's going to be a reality. But I don't usually think about it like, on a Sunday, let's talk about it. And so it just ended up being kind of a perfect thing because Advent as a season is a season of waiting. But we're waiting for Jesus, yes. This is like the narrative we're in. But what we're really waiting for in Advent is we're waiting for God's new world. We're waiting for the new heaven and new earth. We're waiting for the return of the King. We're waiting for God to finish fully healing and redeeming and restoring this creation. And so in Advent, we kind of actually find ourselves in the middle of a tension. We find ourselves in the middle of this, there's a thing about the way it is that is good and God blessed and God is using it. And then there's this way that it is supposed to be, and it's not. And we feel that acutely. And so Advent just allows us to tell the truth about that. Advent says, of course it's like that. Yeah, that's kind of what it is to follow Jesus. We're in the middle of paradox all the time. And so this ended up being this great opportunity because the other thing that happens, if you're like me, you're walking around, and this is a season where I think because of the spending and the gift-giving that's part of the just narrative culturally, you end up getting propositioned a lot more frequently by someone on the street that walks up to you and says, could I get a dollar for a bus ticket? Or could I just need $7 so I can get back to Statesville? Or could I get just a little bit of food? Has this happened to anyone this month? Raise your hand if you've been probably, yeah, yeah. And then has it happened to you, raise your hand if it's happened to you in the last year? Yeah, all the time. And now, tell me, raise your hand, who has felt coming away from that encounter like you did the right thing and you knew exactly what was going on the whole time? Yeah, very few, occasionally, right? But like, those of us that maybe had our hand up, is it, like Jim Ruffin did, every time does it feel like that? No, like sometimes you're like, okay, I nailed it this time. And then sometimes you're like, ugh, I don't know. Because it's complicated. What are the questions that come up for you when this happens to you, when someone approaches you and is asking just a simple, like, could I get a dollar? Could I have, you know, $7? I need, you know, just a little bit of food. What are the things that, the questions that arise in your mind?
Is it really for that?
Yeah. What are you going to use the money for? Is it really for that? Is it not? What else comes to mind? Are you enabling someone? Are you helping them?
Is this person really in need, or is it a con job?
Is this a con job? Is this person really in need, right? What are other questions that come up?
This
is a temporary fix? Like, am I helping if this person doesn't get a job, you're saying?
I said, no, why don't you get a job?
Oh, why don't you get a job?
You know,
yeah.
If you're able to stand on the corner for 4 hours collecting, why can't you offer your services for breaking
why is this, especially if you're doing this kind of in a broader capacity, like you're there all the time, like why, this is your job, is this the best job for you? You get another job, why don't you get a job, right? Yeah, yeah. Do people resonate with these questions? Yeah, this is what we all feel. All of us do. I feel it. Every single one of us feels this way because there is, at the heart of being asked and propositioned in this way, we enter a very deep, ancient, and mysterious paradox. And I'm going to build toward that. And then I'm going to give us some practical advice for what to do when this actually happens. So first thing to know is that at the heart of the Christian faith is paradox, okay? We are not answer people. We are paradox people, like end to end, all right? So I know. It was harder to find a little image for this than I thought. So basically, yeah, we've got, in the middle of our story, we have Jesus, who is fully human and fully God. What? That's a paradox. That doesn't make sense. How do we hold that together? How can you be 100% of both of those things, right? And yet Christians say, yep. We say yes to that. It's either this or it's that. He was human, he was divine. We say, yes. Both, right? That God is one God, three persons. What? That is that. How does that make sense? That is a paradox. It's a paradox we're comfortable with. We've heard it a lot of times. But that's a paradox, is it not? What do you mean? So wait, let me get this straight. Your one God is three people. How is that not three gods? Well, because it's the one God and the homoousion of the one substance. You know what I'm saying? It's the one and the three and the Trinity and Sunday school. Right? That's a paradox. It's hard. How do you explain that? Those of you that have kids that have been asked that, you found yourself grappling with that, and you usually end up calling me. And I'm like, you know? And it's fine. And very often what we end up doing is we come up with an example that we're like, okay, I think this is a pretty good way to explain this. And then we realize maybe a year later that we just taught our children heresy, right? Because we stripped it down. Mary, this time of year, Mary is both a virgin and a mother. No problem, right? Easy peasy. Take that to health class. Like, how does that work? So we profess paradox all the time. The important thing to remember is that paradox in Christianity is just the way it is. It's par for the course. And the truth is in the middle of that paradox, is in the middle of that tension. Heresies over the course of Christian history have been about resolving those tensions, right? So the Arian heresy, famously, that kind of is combated by the Nicene Creed, and that many of you saw St. Nicholas punched him. Do you know about St. Nicholas punching Arius? Or pulled his beard out? Yeah, it's a classy story. I don't know if Lauren covered that with the kids at the St. Nicholas Festival. But heresies, what they usually do is they take a paradox and they simplify them. They strip them down. They resolve them. Jesus just appeared to be God. He wasn't really God. He just appeared. Or he just appeared to be human. He wasn't really a person. We just thought he was, right? You know? They simplify, they strip down, they resolve paradox and tension. And as Christians, that's not what we do. We go into them. We go through them. We find the truth in the midst of them. Okay, have I overmade that point now? Right? All right, get on with it. So when it comes to the Bible, I would give this guy money, just so you know. I'd be like, hold on, I'm gonna go to the ATM, you need more. So what we see in the scriptures, okay, though, is not necessarily a lot of tension when it comes to the needy and the poor, okay? And this is just kind of a broad tour. There are lots of other things to say, but we'll start Old Testament. Exodus 22. If you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not treat it like a business deal. Charge no interest. What? So let me get this straight. God's restoring the world. God chooses a group of people to do it. God says, I want you guys to build a system of government to take care of the people that are needy. And if somebody finds themselves in need and you're going to loan them money, don't make a profit on that. That's not part of my dream. And all the bankers said, come on now. Easy, preacher. So there's this already, like, out of the gate. It's not like don't loan them money. It's just like you don't want to put somebody in a spot where they get stuck and they can't get out. If they're in need, like, don't capitalize on that, right? Which is really what's going on with this, okay? You can charge interest, but be ethical, right? It expands. Deuteronomy 7, basically God says, okay, and this is a bigger conversation and a teaching for another time. But if you're not familiar with this, what happens is in the Jewish culture, when they kind of put together their society and God gives, this is in the law, this is in Torah, God says, here's what I want you to do. You can like, you're going to find yourself like living, working, and you will have a bad year with your crops, or you're going to have a piece of livestock that dies, or you're going to end up, you know, 1 year that you're in need and you don't have what all you need. So if you need to borrow money, if you need to kind of like step into indentured servanthood to pay off any debts that you've got, if you even need to sell the ancestral land that you were given, because the land was split up among the people and given out evenly to all of the tribes, if you have to sell some of that, every 50 years, we're going to have something called the Year of Jubilee. And when that happens, what's going to happen is we are going to take the debt record, what you owe, what you don't owe, what you have gained, and what you have lost, and we're going to reset all of it. And everybody goes back to the original lands that they have, okay? So get that. Any debt that you've accrued, gone. Your Visa bill, gone. Your Amex bill, done. But you know what else is? Your 401k, your IRA. Like, you can't amass wealth or debt for too long. Once every generation, God resets it, right? Guess how many times that the people of Israel observed the Year of Jubilee? Zero, right? Just part of the issue, why they go into exile. And so with that as the backdrop, there's this instruction given about the needy. If anyone is poor among you, your fellow Israelites, in any of the towns or of the lands your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward them. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend them whatever they need. Be careful not to harbor this wicked thought. Here it is. The seventh year, the year for canceling debts, is near. So that you do not show ill will toward the needy among your fellow Israelites and give them nothing. Look, isn't your Jubilee coming up? You're canceling debts? I don't need to give you anything. Pretty soon it's going to all be taken care of. That's a wicked thought, right? They may then appeal to the Lord against you, and you will be found guilty of sin. So give generously to them. Do so without a grudging heart. Then, because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to. There will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your fellow Israelites who are poor and needy in your land. Be open-handed. Give generously. Don't close off to the people that are in need. You give, right? Pretty clear. Don't even use this theological system as some sort of justification to not be generous. If someone's in need, help. All right? Now, what's cool, and this is also a Bible study for another time, is Jesus actually picks up on this teaching in this story. He's at the dinner, and he's in Bethany, and Martha comes in and serving. Lazarus is at the table, and Mary says, comes in, took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. But Judas Iscariot was one of his disciples.
The one who was about to betray him
said, why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor? That sounds like a solid gripe against Jesus, right? And John includes, he only said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief and he kept the common purse and used to steal what was put into it. So Jesus says, leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You always have the poor among you, but you do not always have me. So Jesus rebukes Judas, and he knows Judas is like dipping into the purse. But what Jesus is doing, this last line, has anyone ever heard verse 8 before and felt troubled? Like, why does Jesus say, you'll always have the poor among you, but you won't always have me? Like, what does that mean? Well, what he's doing something called a remez, where you reference another piece of scripture and then you change a piece of it, and the change is where the truth is. So the Deuteronomy text is what he's referencing in 7:11 here. Hey, there will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your fellow Israelites. So the command is, the poor will always be among you, therefore be open-handed. Jesus says, the poor will always be among you, but you will not always have me. There's something about his ministry, his impending death on the cross, that is going to deal with the poverty thing. There's something about what he's doing that is going to right the big cosmic problems that create need in the first place. Jesus is up to something that large. That's what's at stake in his ministry. Which is why you find the early church, like, what's the first thing that they start doing? Giving stuff away. Like, what are they known for in Acts? They're known for sharing. sharing with each other and sharing with everybody that has a need. Oh, you've got a need? I'll sell something I've got to make sure your need is covered. That's what they're known for over and over. And you see this teaching carry on to like the earliest Christian letters, 1 John. We know love by this. Here's what love looks like. That Jesus laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. So how does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods, yet sees a brother or sister in need and refuses to help? Ouch. Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and action. We love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God, yet say, John, what can we do about this? Is it me? Is it where I'm standing? Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother or sister, whom they have seen, cannot love God, whom they have not seen. He has given us this command. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. Right, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. Like, you come to the end of this list, and you feel like, I should give to everybody that asks, no matter what, don't you? Isn't that what it feels like? Right? And then you start to talk to people that have hung around with addicts, that have hung around with liars, that have been with people that take advantage. And you realize that sometimes the most loving thing you can do is say no to somebody. You ever been in that situation? Where the thing that actually helped the most, that was the most loving, wasn't to share, but it was actually to say no, to have a boundary. Well, what are we supposed to do with that? I want an easy answer, Dixon. I want there to be a clear path. I want you to lay out 20 Bible verses to make it totally clear that I can just give money to anybody that asks all the time and resolve all of the tension that I feel when someone comes and asks me for money. Can't you do that? And the answer is no, I can't. Not if you want to do the Jesus thing. Because what is happening in the middle of us being asked, okay, is that we are, when someone asks us for money, we are confronted with a deep and ancient and cosmic brokenness in the creation. Somebody doesn't have what they need, or someone is using me to try to advance some sort of ulterior motive, and they're lying to me, they're not being honest. And so what's happening in that moment is not like the peace and shalom and wholeness of God. It's this illustration that things aren't like they're meant to be. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's happening in that moment. It came at you. You didn't choose it. You weren't looking for it. It came and got you. It chased you down in the CVS parking lot. It happened while you were pumping gas, right? It happens to me a lot. I don't know why. And I don't wear the collar all the time, but it comes at you and you're confronted. And part of the reason that we feel this anxiety is because we want to do the right thing in general, I would say. But also, I think we are experiencing some of the core brokenness that still exists in this creation in that moment. In some form or fashion, we're sitting at the middle of the deep, mysterious sin that's floating around in this creation that God is in the middle of healing and redeeming and restoring. So what's our temptation going to be when we're confronted with that paradox? We want to resolve it, don't we? So here's how we want to resolve it. We either say, I'm going to give money all the time no matter what. I can resolve my tension by always giving. Doesn't matter. I'm just going to give, boom, regardless. Or we resolve it by saying, you can't trust anybody. They might use it for bad stuff. I'm not going to give. And I'm never going to give. Who's to say what they're going to use that money for? I'm not going to do it. But what have we learned from Christian history about resolving tensions? It's not really where the truth is. The truth of this thing is that when we're confronted with this, we can't resolve the tension. That's our temptation, is to try to go to either one. If you are in that space where you feel like, I just feel overwhelmed by the tension and I want to resolve it and I don't know what to do about it, guess what? You are right in the right place. You are following Jesus in that moment. You are exactly where you're supposed to be. It's not supposed to feel easy, good, comfortable, because we're being confronted with the reality, the brokenness of this world, and a God that wants to use us to heal it. You are entering into the pain of the world just like your rabbi Jesus. Are you with me on that? So, don't resolve it. Let's talk about some practical stuff real fast. So, people, in my experience, and people I know personally that are engaged in this, people that beg or that ask for money, that panhandle, either kind of like in a more organized way, like I know we kind of have organized panhandling in Winston. Robert and I talked about this at some point. Like we were talking about this maybe a year ago at small group, I think. At any rate, Robert's asked questions. He's like, works for the city. And he's like, what do we do about this? Like, should we give things? So like, there's been some organization. So you'll find like organized panhandling. We have like 4 hours and a shift. Or you'll have kind of people on the sly coming to get you, okay? In either of those cases, people that ask for money usually are good at it because they do it a lot, okay? So there is a sense that like, you might get conned. It really could happen. And you're not wrong to sort of feel like this is a strange social arrangement that's happening right now. You know, someone that's coming at me, like this is weird, because by coming and asking you for money, if the need is legitimate, it's legitimate. But if it's not, they're basically treating you like a cash machine, right? How can I extract the cash from Liz and get on my way here? You know, I got needs, so could I get, you know, this money for whatever? And now you're basically an ATM, you know? So the unchristian thing to do is to resolve the tension. Get away from me, get a job, you know, whatever. Or just take what you want. The Christian thing to do, I think, is to do that Jesus thing that he always does where he like turns the tables and he flips the script. So here's the way you flip the script. Somebody comes and asks you for money, for whatever they're asking for. I need $2, $3, whatever. What I always tell people is I say, I don't ever give out money. I don't give out money. But tell me what you need. And then they're like, well, I need a bus ticket. You know? Okay, here's what we're going to do. The bus station is 4 blocks that way. I will meet you there, and I'll buy you a bus ticket. Right? And then if you go down there, and you meet them there, and they need the bus ticket, they'll show up, and you'll buy it, and they'll have it. If they don't show up, well, they didn't need it, right? Why did you need it? I need a meal. I got to get some food. Well, come on, let's go figure out what you need. Here, you know, food lines right here. Or let's walk down to Publix. It's controversial. You know, whatever. We go in there. Well, what do you need? You know, and I've done this. I've walked around the store with people that have needed stuff, and we, like, filled a shopping basket, and I bought it for them, you know? Or sometimes if they're hungry, well, let's go get a meal. And so we'll go and we'll go in a restaurant, we'll have a meal, and we'll sit down, and I'll buy them either food from the counter or I'll get it for them to go. I've also put people up in hotels. You know, what's cold? I got to get over the thing. I was like, well, yeah, I was like in downtown Nashville one time, and they were asking, this guy was doing it, and I was with some students. And so he's like, I got to get over here so I can get a meal and a shelter for the night, because it was January. And I was like, well, I don't give out money, and I can't really put these kids in a car with you. You shouldn't get in the car with people you don't know. So what if we do this? Let's go over here to the Spaghetti Factory and have dinner, and then we put them up in the Marriott for 2 nights downtown Nashville. The key thing in the whole business is this. In a dynamic that can be dehumanizing, you're a cash machine. Or, you know, here's my person that I'm going to buy the charity things for. What Christians do, I think, at our best is we flip the script by rehumanizing the whole process. I'm not going to just give out money, but what do you need? I'm not going to ask you to make a sacrifice. I will make the sacrifice to get you what you need. I will travel to this grocery store to buy you food. I will take time out of my schedule to buy you this meal, and then I will sit with you and eat it. When we order it, I won't order it for you like we're not friends. We'll order together, right? Because I want to preserve the dignity of this person that's with me. And if the need is real, they will take you up on it. If they really need what they're asking for and you're going to give it to them, they will totally take you up on it. If they don't, then they won't. Or they will begrudgingly do it and just kind of resent you the whole time. But then even then, you've done this beautifully redemptive thing by not responding to them with dehumanization, but rehumanization, which is what the Jesus agenda is about in the first place. Does that make sense? So that's like, if you're looking for a tagline, like, what do I do? When you encounter this, I never give out money, but what do you need? And then when they ask, you take the bite. You take the hit on your schedule, your time, your wallet, and do it. But it will change things. I just need a tank of gas. Follow me over here to the gas station. I'll fill you up, right? Whatever it is. And you'll start to see. What'll start to happen is the Holy Spirit will start working people your way that really have need. You'll start to see it happening over and over again. okay? And then the people that don't, they take off. If the need isn't real, if they're just looking for, if they're trying to scam you, they don't hang around. I had somebody really like lay out a really impassioned plea for me about they needed gas, and I was like, okay, let's do it. So we went over, I was gonna fill up their car and give them a gas card, and I told them that. And while we're driving to the gas station, they just peeled off and drove off somewhere else. And I was like, all right, I guess we're not doing that. I was like, it's still free gas. I mean, come on, I was gonna give you free gas. You know. So those are some of the practical things of this. And I think I just want to encourage us to remember, no matter what happens, okay, this is an example of when you're in the middle of that situation, you want to do what's right, you feel the tension, you are in the middle of what Jesus says, you are blessed when you hunger and thirst for righteousness. Okay, that's what you're doing. The righteousness of God is the shalom of God. Beatitudes people know if you sat in my class who listened to this. It's the God, the dream that God is the healing, wholeness, restored creation that God always intended. That's the righteousness of God. And so you're blessed not when you get it right or not when you avoid it. You're blessed when you recognize that things aren't like they're supposed to be and yet you want them to be and you feel that tension in your bones. God says, I'm with you there. You are exactly at the right place. You couldn't be in a better place than to sit in this tension, in this place, in this discomfort. That's where you'll find me. That's where I'll be. That's where you'll grow. That's where you'll find the peace and hope that you're looking for. Not in resolving it, but in the middle of it, when you hunger and thirst for righteousness. Make sense? Okay, so now, a caveat to the whole thing. Oh, that's a funny slide. Okay. You're blessed in the tension. All right, so there's at my former parish, I would get assistance calls. I was like the priest that vetted a lot of the assistance calls, and people would just call randomly, hey, you know, looking for some help with rent, looking for some help with, you know, food or whatever. And so I was, you're like on the phone trying to negotiate this reality. And so I had this one woman call me. Her name was Angelique Woodson, and or is. Angelique was really abrasive and had called me like several times in the past year looking for help with rent, looking for help with a water bill. And every time I talked to Angelique, she just wore me out, rubbed me the wrong way. I was so exhausted by her. She would be really pushy. She would be rude to me. Well, I don't understand why you're not gonna give me something. Why aren't you gonna help me? What are you gonna do? You know, this kind of thing. And you're just, you know, like, give me a break. But she would keep calling, you know, and I would talk to her and I would try to kind of like do this rehumanizing thing and not lose my temper, but ooh, it just drove me nuts. And so so I hadn't heard from her in like, I think it had been 9 or 10 months. And I was like, I don't know where Angelique is, but this is great. And then I get this call. Pastor Dixon, I got to talk to you because I need help because my car caught on fire and it caught my house on fire. And then my landlord's telling me that they're going to kick me out if I don't have the money for my rent, but I can't drive anywhere because the car's bad. And then she spun this whole story about the school system because my son, he's in the school. And I was like, I didn't know he had kids. Okay. And so she's got kids and, you know, and my son is at the school. And, you know, he's special needs. And also, because of special needs, like, they won't let him into these classes, and they're telling me that I can't come to the school because he's special needs, and that if I do, that they're going to, like, call the social services, because you know how that is. And so I need, you know, help with, I think it was rent in this case. It was rent. So I need $900 for my rent, because I'm 2 months behind. And I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I was like, I knew that I didn't have $900 in my discretionary account. I didn't have access to that kind of money. So I'm thinking, well, this is clearly, you know, BS. What's more, I knew that the way that she had described the school system and their work with special needs kids was inaccurate. My oldest has autism, and we had been through this whole run with him, and I knew how IEPs worked, I knew how the system worked, I knew what the public schools were required to do because we were in the public schools. I knew what they were not supposed to do, and as everything she described was not, isn't the way it worked, it wasn't how it happened. And so I was like, she was just rubbing me, well, are you going to help me? Are you going to do it? And she's like, push, push, push. And I was just like, Angelique, I can't talk to you about this now. I was like, I feel like I'm going to be mean to you. So look, just call me back. As you can call me back tomorrow. I was like, I don't have any money. What if I call you tomorrow? Do you think I have money? I don't think so. But fine, you can call me back. So just sort of in frustration, I hang up the phone. About an hour or so later, the administrative assistant comes in and is like, hey, Dixon, you had $1,000 donated to your discretionary fund. So I had no money in it, and now I have $1,000. And there's this woman that wants $900. And I was like, oh, that's just so weird. I was like, it's the weirdest thing, because I just talked to Angelique, and everybody knew her at this point, and it's just, you know, so ridiculous, and da-da-da-da-da. And as I'm telling her this, I have this overwhelming sense from God, I'm supposed to give her this money. And I'm like, I dismissed it, because it was so ludicrous. She's so obviously lying to me. I'm not going to give her this money. And so, but I feel this sense from God. It's like, this is hers. I brought this into this account because it's supposed to go to her. It's not yours, it's hers. And I was like, I was walking to my car that afternoon, and I was like, God, you are an idiot. You are a fool. I was like, this woman is scamming me. She is lying. You're reinforcing this. You're part of the problem. Like, I was totally just incensed by the whole thing. So the next day, I wait for her call, Angelique's call, and she calls right on time at 2:30. And I pick up the phone. Pastor Dixon, yeah, how's it going? Are you going to give me money or not? Because I need da-da-da-da. And she launches right into me, and I just let her go. And she's rolling, increasingly abrasive, increasingly caustic. And finally she stops. Are you going to do this? Are you going to give me money? And I was like, Angelique, here's the thing. I need to tell you this. I don't believe you. I think that you're a liar. I think that you're lying to me. Why would you say I'm a liar? You can't say that, Dad. I was like, no. But it doesn't matter, because God believes you. I don't know why, but I had money come to me that I'm supposed to give you. What? And she stops. And I was like, why would you say I'm a liar? If you're supposed to give me this money, why would you say I'm a liar? I was like, well, because I need to tell you that I know about the special needs system in the schools. Like, I have a son that has autism, and I know exactly what they're required to do, and I know how the system works when you sign up for an IEP, and I know what the counselors are supposed to do, and what they said to you isn't what they're supposed to say, because da-da-da-da-da. And I know that the symptoms you're describing for your son would land him in this kind of category, which would require these kind of services that they're required to do, and they would do that. Your son has autism, you say? Yes. Okay, where does autism come from, Pastor? I said, well, it's a developmental disability. I don't know where it comes from. It's like some sort of environmental cause. But that's not the point. The point is that you're lying. Well, my son doesn't look at me when he talks to me. That's autism, right? And I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, I can't. Well, wait, is there a cure for it? Because no one will tell me if there's a cure. I'm like, what do you mean, is there a cure? Like, you have a child that's autistic? Well, he's sick all the time because I can't make him stop touching his feces, which is something extremely autistic children will do. They're on the spectrum. Well, yeah, that is what they do. Well, at the school, they just kept telling me that if I bring him there, that they won't admit him because he's going to make other people sick. And I was like, because he's on the spectrum. And what I start to realize is that Angelique is not a liar. She is probably on the spectrum herself. She's mentally ill. She has a child that has a severe developmental disorder, and no one will help her. And so, sorry. So I find myself in this moment that's like really holy because I took a second to listen. I'm sorry. So what I encourage you to do, wherever you are, whoever approaches you, I'm totally not trying to make this point by crying. I just am. Take that, class. Listen. Because even if you think it's BS, even if you think it's a lie, you never know what God is going to want you to do. You never know what all the ins and outs are, and you never know how God might be wanting to use you to bring heaven to earth, even when you're convinced that they're full of it. So, go forth, be uncomfortable, and find God in that discomfort, knowing that you will always be guided wherever you need to go. Whew. Amen. I should say, by way of denouement, I ended up being able to be an advocate for Angelique at her school and help her get into an apartment and get her kids services. because I thought she was a liar. So, there it is.